if it wasn't for that, if it wasn't caught on film, if he wasn't identified, if he didn't lose his job over it, how is this man held accountable? Meaning, like, how is he to know he cannot do this? Because it seems like he can just get away with it. Had I not identified him, what would have happened? Because it said in the reports, Jim Ionzano turned himself in after the viral video identified him. Like, it leads me to believe, like, had he not been identified, had that not been filmed, then that would have just been another day at Robex.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra-premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard. It's the higher standard. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the now infamous and arguably world-famous Higher Standard Podcast. I say world-famous because although we charted at number 50 in the United States in entrepreneurship, I never thought we would have the reach that we have now. We just charted in Peru. We just charted in the Philippines. And the list goes on, including some major European countries. And I'm super proud of those accomplishments. And as your host, I am Chris, and I'm here to take you on this wonderful journey, which started off as just financial literacy and real estate education and a little bit of ranting and a little bit of, you know, raving from time to time, has turned into, I think, a broader appreciation for humanity and broader discussions with some pretty fascinating people. And we've worked really, really hard to bring you some wonderful stories from real influencers in real life, not necessarily quantified by their social media content, but by the impact that they're making on society. Well, this particular guest today, Donesh, you may have seen before, and if you have TikTok, I can guarantee you you've seen him before. His username is at that Donesh guy. Donesh spelled D-A-N-E-S-H. I don't normally plug somebody before, but if you haven't seen his social media profiles, he's on TikTok, he's on Instagram, he's on Twitter, you owe it to yourself to check it out, and you will probably be curious during this episode of exactly what it is we're talking about, because some of the stuff is pretty inflammatory. Some people label Donesh as a doxer or somebody who doxes people, essentially gets their private and public information and puts it out in the world. That is a complete misconception of him. What I can tell you is that his social media accounts have done their fair share of holding people accountable for bad behavior. And while you might naturally think, well, the authorities do that and, you know, responsibility in life does it, it doesn't necessarily work that way. As an attorney, I can tell you there are lots of times where the punishment doesn't necessarily fit the crime, or someone never gets punished at all because there's just not enough manpower to go after chasing people who do really bad or really stupid things. So I'm just giving you this broad overview backdrop, but we'll get into it in the podcast. What I was super excited about is my wife and I have seen Donesh's social media a number of times, and we have talked about it and has created conversations in our household about how we want to raise our son and what's good and what's bad. And if nothing else, this sets the tone for a conversation that society needs to have about what we expect from one another. It's entertaining. It's a little bit of funny. It's a little bit of sad. It's a lot of different emotions, but that's what makes Donesh's page so great. His TikTok page in about 2 years, maybe even a little less, has grown to 1 million followers. Instagram's growth has been equally as exceptional, and pretty much everything he puts on his Twitter page for some reason has wound up making the national media. So I am sure you have seen him in one way, shape, or form at some point in the last couple months. And I was elated when he accepted my invite to come on the show. He was very authentic, and I knew it was going to be good. I just didn't know it was going to be as good as it was. So before we jump into this episode, I want to say one last time, thank you all for your continued support. you helping this podcast grow and you doing the things that you have done to help spread the word has meant a tremendous amount to me. And while I talk about that in the intro and the outro, I wanted to say it again. Thank you. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one and only That Donesh Guy. So, Donesh, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the show. I have been a huge fan of yours. My wife is a huge fan of yours. I love what you're doing on social media and how you're bringing awareness to so many things. Can you tell us how you got started and how this journey has gotten to where it's at?
Sure. First of all, my pleasure, and I hope you're doing well. Thank you to you and your wife for watching my content, by the way. I'll never get used to people saying that they're my fans of anything, but it's a cool concept. Yeah, the way that I got started was I've been doing, let me just tell you, 13 years ago, I started doing stand-up comedy, started performing in front of college audiences in California. I was doing that for a long time, and we started to get some success over it. My friends and I started touring across the U.S., doing other colleges, and that led to eventually being able to do cruise lines and corporate gigs, and it was pretty amazing. I was one of my favorite contracts I had for years. I was working with the Disney Cruise Line, and they would just have you on for a week at a time. You do 30 minutes of show, and then the rest of the time you just enjoy the cruise. And it was like the best job I ever had, to be quite honest. COVID hit, and that became impossible though. So I got onto TikTok because I wanted to see what it was all about, and I was doing a drive across the U.S. So I thought, well, this would be a great way to start a TikTok journey. I would document my drive across the United States. And so I drove from California to New York, and I documented every state I was in, and I gained a lot of followers on TikTok, but it just seemed, I was not used to the platform. It was new to me. So I thought that this was just a bunch of spam bots. I'm like, how did these people find me? This is weird. And I had about 10,000 followers or something. I deleted my account because I literally thought it was just some like broken foreign app that didn't really work well.
Because in the early days, like everybody followed like super quick, right? It was like wildfire. Right, yeah.
And people kept saying FYP and I didn't know what that meant. And so I just thought, well, this is obviously broken. So I deleted my entire account. And then I got back on it a little while later once a couple of my friends who I did comedy with were getting some success on it. And I realized, oh, maybe I was actually doing well. So I got back on it to start doing some comedy, and man, it was not going well. People were not very entertained by what I was posting. I tried to do some political stuff. No one, you know, it wasn't that popular. I gained 100,000 followers through it, but it kind of like I got a standstill there. And so I thought, you know, maybe what I should be doing is looking for bad information that people are putting out there, whether it comes to politics or health or whatever. And so I started to look at what other people were posting and putting out there. And right off the bat, I came across something that just grabbed my attention. It was this woman who was openly talking about disciplining her children, her two-year-old, with a belt, whipping them with a belt. And I was just like, that's horrifying. I was just like, it was shocking to me. And I was like, this isn't political. This isn't debatable. This is downright horrifying. And so I thought, I'm not going to play games with this. So I was like, I'm just going to report this person to CPS. So anyway, so to do that, I need to find out who she was. So I looked her up. I found her information, and I reported her to CPS. But then I wanted to make an example out of it because her video did so well, and that I wanted to like kind of be like, no, this isn't okay. This isn't normal. And you have to think about this being a children's app. There are children on this app who may be getting abused at home will watch your video and think that this is normal. So I'm not going to lie. So I did a video showing how I found her information. Of course, I blocked out all the sensitive information, and I reported her CPS. And I didn't think this was not something I was trying to like get big with or anything. I legitimately was like, this is the right thing to do. That video that I made got 7 million views. And suddenly my platform started to take off. And so TikTok immediately banned me.
You're kidding. Really?
This was last year. Yeah. Yeah. They immediately banned me. And I didn't know what was going on. So I kept writing to TikTok and I was like, why is this person talking about, you know, whipping their child of the belt, their 2-year-old of the belt, get to keep their platform and I get banned? And
that's bizarre. Yeah.
Well, I started looking into it more, and a lot of TikTok's moderation is automated. So you don't get human eyes on it, at least not in America. I don't know how it works in TikTok and other countries, but in America, you don't get human eyes on it. So they have trouble deciding what side of a issue you're actually even on. So if you're talking about, like, say, child abuse, or you're talking about COVID, it may assume you're on the wrong side of it, putting out bad information, and it'll just automatically ban you. It doesn't pick up on things like sarcasm or subtlety or anything like that. So after being banned for about a month, I reached out to the TikTok support in Canada, because after researching, I realized it was the American one that's automated. Canada will get some eyes on it. So I sent it to Support Canada, and I explained the situation, and suddenly my account was back.
That's insane.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And from then on out, you know, anytime there was a video of, you know, child abuse or groomers or, you know, pedophiles or anything like that, people will send it to me and go, can you find out who this is and hold them accountable? And, you know, I can't say no. If there's, like, I say, a pedo on the app and I have the ability to find out who that is, of course I'm going to immediately do that. I can't enable that. And so a lot of it became that at first, where cases of abusive children, cases of groomers, cases of pedophilia. But this subject is very, very heavy. And it was hard for myself, hard for my audience sometimes. But it was, you know, I felt empowered and I knew it was the right thing to do. And somewhere down the line, people started sending me other videos. People would send me videos and go, this guy's being racist. This guy's being violent, whatever it might be. Can you find out who it is? And I go, oh, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And I guess I just didn't realize I was good at doing this. I just kind of fell into it and realized, oh, I'm pretty good at finding people. There's this guy sent me a death threat who said, I'm going to kill you and your family. And so I pulled up every single one of his, like, I pulled up his criminal record, and he's got a lot of shit and on probation and everything. So I called his probation officer and said, hey, this guy's online threatening me. And then people were, like, entertained by that. They're like, wow, you know, you don't want to mess with you. But the thing is, I'm not dealing out punishment. These people did it to themselves. This person threatened me. I didn't put a gun up to his head and said, hey, I need you to threaten me. Like, it's his decision to do that.
You're providing accountability, but if they weren't doing anything wrong, there would be no accountability, right? I mean, that's not necessarily, you're not putting, I see how there could be some rhetoric putting blame on you for calling people out or bringing attention to a subject, but what's the difference between you and the news or you and any other platform where somebody is outed?
Exactly. You know, exactly that, where people will say, you know, this is doxing. And no matter what I do, they'll call it doxing. If I say someone's first name, they'll say it's doxing. And I mean, it's fundamental misunderstanding of what doxing is, but also misunderstanding that in cases of, like, wrongdoing, like somebody is hurting people or somebody is just needs to be identified for the police and stuff, that is not malice. It is not malicious to identify that person. It would be malicious if I just said, hey, there's this guy I went to high school with. I don't really like him. Everyone go harass him. You know, like, that would be malicious and that would be harassment. And even in these cases that I work on, once it is completed or once they're held accountable for that certain thing, I don't continue to talk about them or go off on them because it's over. There's no reason to, like, harass them at that point. And so it's funny, all of it, sometimes at the end of, like, any of my cases, I might receive a cease and desist from the person that I went after.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I've received a couple, but it's just so confusing to me. I'm like, I'm not talking about you anymore. The subject's over. It's done.
Well, even then, I mean, the cease and desist letter, what are they going to enforce you from ceasing and desisting and doing? It's public knowledge at that point.
Yeah, they want me to take down videos and stuff, which is not going to happen. I actively defy each one of those because those are overstepping. They're just, I know what it is. It's a lawyer trying to help out the person that paid them hundreds of dollars to write this. They want to say everything that they can say in the most threatening way they can. But if I was somebody who wasn't familiar with this, I would probably be intimidated into taking on the content, but I know that there's no legal grounds for it. So I ignore it. But at the same time, I'm not talking about that person. It's over already. So it's just a waste of a couple $100.
Well, and obviously my wife and I are fans and I've seen a lot of your content. And I know that whenever you do call somebody out, almost everything I've ever seen has been relatively public record or voluntarily provided by them. So it's hard to get you to cease and desist providing information that they gave the world, right? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yep. I never give out private information. While it is perfectly legal, I never give out addresses or phone numbers either. It is perfectly legal for me to put out somebody's address or their phone number, but I don't do that. I never do that. TikTok's policy would not allow that anyway, but personally, I think that could be unethical. So, I also have been really good about blurring out children's faces and names involved in the story. that's what a lot of it comes to, is people don't want to take accountability. Now, a lot of people also throw back at me and go, who holds you accountable to me? And they go, look, the rest of the world, you know, we're adults and everyone else holds themselves accountable. Everyone else apologizes when they make a mistake. It's not me that's the odd man out. You know, it's all the people who believe they're above accountability, believe they can do whatever they want to do and they shouldn't have to face. Like, you saw this one I did with Jim Iannazzo.
I did. And so I, for those who listen to the podcast, they already know I'm an attorney by trade and I also work in banking. So that one hit home because I know myself personally, if I were to do something that's stupid, I would lose my job. I know that inherently. So the fact that someone could be out there as cavalier, and let's provide some context. This guy was publicly berating people, and I think it was a juice shop or something to that effect.
It was a Robex smoothie shop, and it was miners that he was berating and making racist comments towards, and eventually lost his temper.
All on video.
All caught on video. Eventually lost his temper, threw the shake at the miner, hit her with it. And you could see, he throws that with force.
Oh, yeah. I thought, okay, well, this guy is completely off the hinges. But the racist commentary on top of that, I mean, and it was no surprise to me that he ultimately lost his job as a result of what happened. And I look at some situations like that, and I got to say, I mean, I look through all of the comments because, you know, comment sections where the party's at and on your post. And I look at that and there's a resounding positive, like this man deserved repercussions for his actions. And the law is not going to get him for assault and battery, but him losing his job, I think that's valuable to society to know you can't do this, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for that, if it wasn't caught on film, if he wasn't identified, if he didn't lose his job over it, how is this man held accountable? Meaning like, how is he to know he cannot do this? Because it seems like he can just get away with it. Had I not identified him, what would have happened? Because it said in the reports, Jim Iannazzo turned himself in after the viral video identified him. Like, it leads me to believe, like, had he not been identified, had that not been filmed, then that would have just been another day at Robex.
Yeah, look, I mean, those are young kids. They're not going to be able to afford getting an attorney. And even if they do, you're going to go for him civilly for some minor level assault. It was the public outrage over just how incredibly indecent his behavior was that really had the impact. But there's no law remedy for that.
No. What there is like, as a business owner myself, and I don't talk about what my business is, but as a business owner myself, if I have somebody working for me, and they're behaving that way in public, whether they're on the clock or not, that's representing my company. I would want to know, as a business owner, I would want to know that. And I would want to disassociate with that, because the last thing I would want is to be, take that, the responsibility or have that be part of my image now, because my employees out there doing that. So when I tell employers about this, I expect a thank you, to be quite honest. I mean, because I would want to know too. I would want to know that this is happening. And when I found Jim, it was like, I got to tell you, I wish you were there in the room with me. I was sweating bullets. I'm like, this is the richest guy I have ever had to hold accountable.
I saw a comment from you to that effect. And I thought to myself, like, it shouldn't matter, but it does matter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This guy could afford to pay someone to have me killed. Like, I got to make sure I got the right guy. And I know I have the right guy, but I'm just like looking at it side by side, just sweating, going like, I cannot be wrong. Of all the things I cannot be wrong about, this one, definitely not.
But you weren't wrong. But let's be clear. You weren't wrong. And you went through a ton of validation on that. And you got the right guy.
Yep. That made me feel confident after I was able to validate it all. And even after I get all my verification, I still just go like, did I miss anything? Anyway, I put the name out there once I had it. And that video, of course, it went insanely viral on my TikTok. I got 37 million views. I've never gotten to that number before, but 37 million views. I got tons of views on Twitter and everything. But the point is, it's not about like people will hear that and go, well, it's all about the views. The views is where I have my ability to do this. If no one was looking, you know, tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it, you know? So if I didn't have my platform, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. So being able to say, this is Jim, and having everyone see that, there's no escape from that. And there should not be. I mean, that was what he did was absolutely awful. And his excuses don't matter for what he did. They don't match up with what he did.
So let's dissect that a little bit. Has anybody ever, and I haven't seen this from any of your videos, has anybody ever come out with like an open, like first knee-jerk response apology to being called out? Or I think in every instance, oh, really? Okay. So there has been somebody who's apologized like day one.
There have been two cases where that happened. One was Dominic Guy Parks. He was caught on camera. yelling at people saying that white people are superior, black people are, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he was saying they're less than white people and that white people are the master race, all, very Nazi stuff. The guy looked like just some guy you'd see at a, at a wedding party, like some dude, some frat bro. Like he didn't, it wasn't surprising. It was disappointing. It was sad. So I identified him by, he had deleted all of his social media accounts. So that was really difficult. But the thing about Facebook is that it just takes one friend who had tagged you in something. You could delete your account, but that name will still show up. So the way I got his name was by looking for him in different photos and stuff. I could find him that was posted by someone else. I found him in a wedding party, but then he wasn't named in that wedding party. So I went through and identified everyone else in the wedding party, everyone else that I could. And I went through looking through their friends, through their everything, and looking for this guy, not knowing at the time he didn't have social media. It was eventually one guy in one wedding party posted something in 2007 on Facebook about getting drinks with him. And that gave me the name. And once I got the name, I put it out there and it went into the news. And I posted something on Twitter saying, this isn't going away, Dominic. And then a Twitter account that just said Dominic and a bunch of numbers said, you're right. I know. I'm sorry. And I was like, huh, I'm going to DM you because I need to verify this is actually you because I want to have a chat. And so I DM'd him and I said, prove that it's you. And he said, what do you want? And I said, send me a picture. Like send me, I had him verifying a couple different ways and it was him. And so he said, I want to make it right. However I can, I was wrong. I regret saying that. I'm not using it as an excuse that I was drunk, but I want to make it right. Yeah. And so I did a video and I said, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a chance to apologize, but I want you to understand that there are going to be a lot of people that will not forgive you and you need to be okay with that. And he said, I am okay with that. I said, okay, then here's the questions I'm going to ask you. Do your best to answer them as well, as honestly as you can. I'm not going to give you direction on anything.
That's incredibly fair. I mean, you give them the opportunity on your own platform to address it and you gave them the heads up, the public sentiment. And I think that's incredibly fair, man. I kind of respect that.
Thank you. I thought so too. I said to him, the questions were, the first two were like, why did you do this? Do you understand? The last question was my favorite. I asked him, do you understand that while you are regretful of this, do you understand why there will be people who will never forgive you? And do you understand why that's okay? And what your responsibility is, even though people will not forgive you? And his answer to that was, and you could see he struggled to say it, but he said, yes, I understand that the reason that people will not forgive me is because this sort of thing will happen. And normally the person who did it, usually a white guy, this is his words, usually a white guy will apologize just so they can get their life back in order, just so the people will stop calling him racist. And then once everyone forgives him, he just goes back as if nothing happened and he gets away with it. So that is why people will not forgive me. And I understand that they won't and they don't have to. I will continue doing work to be a better person, being anti-racist, without expecting anything, because that is what should be normal. And I did not forgive him. It was not my place to do that. I did not forgive him. I said, well, there you have it. You make your own opinion about that. And we will check in with Dominic a little while later, see how he's progressing. I knew the sentiment that certain people were going to have is that, like, no, he's just playing you. And some other people were going to say, okay, I believe him, I forgive him. So I wanted him to be able to get his voice out there and let people react the way they're going to. But I wanted to make sure we put in there that this doesn't mean he's forgiven. And he understood that. So I thought he handled that very well. But at the same time, he could just be making it up. I mean, either way, those videos are out there. What happened, his identity, and him taking ownership of that.
It's incredible that after all these people, it's only two that you can recall that have actually done the right thing. And look, props and respect to that guy for at least attempting to do the right thing. And you using the platform to give him that same opportunity, I think, is incredible. But to think that all the people on this page, and you've got, a million followers now and tens of millions of views. And to think that there's only two people who's attempted that goes to show you how necessary this still is, right? I mean, there's value in this.
Right. I mean, look, if it was you and me, I would expect we would just be like, I fucked up. I made a mistake. And that's the reaction. I mean, that's the problem. That's why my account exists, is because people don't want to take accountability. People are so worried about taking accountability. What they all want to do is blame somebody else or deflect. And what's unfortunately common is blaming me. And I don't think people understand what a third party I am. I did not force you to say those racist things. I didn't do that. I didn't tell, you know, I didn't put a gun up to your head and say, hey, don't forget to be racist today. Like, that's totally on you, man. You did that. I found you.
Well, you sound extremely thoughtful, too. I mean, everything that I've seen you do seems pretty methodical. And I don't know how much time you spend in doing this, but you seem to put a lot of mental thought and energy into every single case that you put out. And you take the time to curate your content. I mean, it's TikTok, but it's curated, right? I mean, you're putting a lot of energy into this.
Yes. I'm very passionate, and I believe in absolutely what I'm doing. And I put aside my own biases, and I look to see what is the issue. You know, why is this an issue? What is the remedy, or is there a remedy other than making sure this person is held accountable? The other person was someone who she merely laughed at a racist joke, but it was very off-putting. She was making sandwiches for homeless people, and then as she put it in a pile, you hear, this is for the Browns on Thanksgiving. This is for the Browns. And then her laughing off about it. And I said, hey, as a member of the Browns, I take offense to that. And then we actually ended up, she profusely apologized. She said, tell me what I got to do to make this right. And so we could do a live where, you know, we kind of just chat about it. And we did. But the problem was she had a comparable platform to me, like the same size that I had. Lots of people defending her while she is out there saying, I'm sorry, please stop defending me. Please. I'm begging, especially the white people in my comment section, stop forgiving me. Stop defending me. Stop it. I am taking accountability for this. And she was battling her own followers, telling them to stop, you know, stop defending me. It's not right for you to defend me. I did something wrong here. And seeing how apologetic she was, seeing how, you know, how much she wanted to make this right. And, you know, time would pass and there was no, like, she reverts back to anything. She was genuinely sorry. And she, at the end of the day, just laughed at a joke that someone else had told. So I took down those videos. And the only reason they got so popular, the problem is they got way too popular because we both had such a large platform. It just brought millions of people into it. And like this crime, like the crime in quotes, isn't as bad as like the other things that I've faced. And I'm sitting here going like, am I really spending like this much of my energy on someone laughing at race? I got more important things to cover. And this really doesn't need this much attention.
And you do, you recover. I mean, look, it's funny. Last night I was looking at a lot of your content, you know, just trying to get ready for this discussion. And there's a lot of questions that came into my head, but I'm looking at some of the severity of the things you're covering. You were covering an illegal, and I don't want, you could probably characterize this better than I could, an illegal medical, like, ivermectin COVID response thing through an Italian restaurant that involved, like, I mean, and this got national news media coverage, and then the news media that reached out to you were trying to cut you out as the source. Like, what the hell?
That's a very common thing, too. A lot of my cases will cut me out. Once it gets to the media, they cut me out. Cut me out as a person identified it. Cut me out as a person that did the work, you know, held this person accountable. I mean, I'm left out of it completely. And this is probably the biggest bust. This is a giant drug bust, prescription drug ring through, an Italian pizza parlor, going through a pharmacy that was complicit, a doctor that was complicit, and a DA that has publicly stated they will not prosecute this Italian restaurant, that they stand with them. This they've said this in the past about other things that they've done, not about this one specifically. And then once I put the pressure on the DA had to come out and make a statement saying, this is outside my jurisdiction because it spans across multiple counties. That's why. This is something for the Attorney General to handle. I pass it on to the Attorney General. And the thing is like, and I just want, like, I'm not a lawyer. You are. Maybe you could tell me, when she says this is outside my jurisdiction because it spans multiple counties, this spans multiple states, but it originates in her county.
She still has an ethical responsibility to prosecute illegal actions that are happening in her county. Now, you could say that it's more complex and that you could then report up to the agency that's responsible for it, in her case, the AG. But let's be clear here. The interstate sovereignty issue, you still have a state. You still have illegal action happening in your state. You could absolutely prosecute. Now, if there is an ongoing investigation that she's aware of at a national level or something to that effect, but her statement is completely wrong. Just call it what it is.
Thank you. Because there is no reason why some dude on TikTok, I'm referring to myself, some guy on TikTok was able to bust this wide open in one day. And nobody, like, no other, like, this has been reported for like, I don't know how long it's been going on, months, weeks. This has been getting reported over and over again. There are Facebook groups, several of them, dedicated to holding these people accountable. They've been contacting the AG, the district attorney. They've been contacting the DEA. They've been contacting the Department of Health and Human Services. They've been doing everything that I did after I identified them, but nothing has been happening. That's what really upset me, because I'm just like, why is it some guy on TikTok was able to find out every single party involved, identify all of them? And I don't have the resources, you know, the police do. I don't have the resources the district attorney or anybody else would have. There's no reason other than there were parties that did not want to prosecute this.
Well, no, there's more than that, actually. I'll say this much. I have a pro bono law firm, and that's what I kind of do on the side to help people. And I've seen a million and one situations where people have come to me in similar situated circumstances with other, you know, issues. And I've been unable to get people to act on it. And it's largely because government agencies are underfunded, frankly. They're usually overworked. And a lot of these people, like DAs and the AG, they usually do that as a transitionary job. They're going to that job to get another job at some point in time with that public experience. But they're not very well paid for a massive workload that they're taking on. The FDIC, the SEC, these agencies, they all have this underfunded. The FTC, I mean, look at how many scams you see on social media right now, where we all know they're scams. We all know this account's a scam. You can report it to, you know, TikTok, to Instagram, and no one does anything to stop it. So there's a little bit of that there. I'm not saying it's valid. It's an absolute excuse, but that's why I see so much inherent value in what it is that you're doing. You can do things as an individual that me as an attorney could never get done. And that's sad.
To an extent, but I mean, that also puts I feel there's a responsibility there. If I can, then I want to. I mean, I don't have to, but I do feel like I want to. And one more thing that I want to make clear too, like while it makes more sense when you put into context that they're overworked and underpaid, let's make clear, TikTok doesn't pay me to do this. I'm not paid to do this. Again, no one's paying me to do this. No one's forcing me to do this. I chose to, and I was able to do it in a day. So while I agree with you that, yeah, there's so much on their plate as it is. And yeah, it is transitioning. You're absolutely right, because the AG actually wants to be governor. You're right. But at the same time, you know, I'm not paid either. I got a lot on my plate too.
No, 100% agree. And I would say, I'm going to make a guess here, and I want you to tell me if I'm crazy or not. I think there's a lot of personal risk for you. Because I have clients and friends that do a similar kind of thing in this space, and they receive death threats. They receive, you know, a lot of safety and risk issues, because the people that are willing to go to the extremes that you've like pointed out, like for example, this kind of ring, there's financial motivation, there's reputational motivation, there's career motivation. They're being held accountable, and they then focus their energy on you. There's personal risk here for you. You are giving up a lot in the way of safety and sanity to do the right thing. And from an ethical perspective, there's not a lot of people willing to take that on.
Yeah, and for good reason. It is very dangerous. And there are a lot of people who approach me and go, how do you do what you do? And I go, it's not about, I want you to look at the responses people give me when I do this. Because when I tell you people don't want to be held accountable, they take it to their grave. They go, you know, what you did trying to hold me accountable is the real issue. And regardless of what people's politics are, a lot of this for me, I've noticed it started around the time where you had a person in office, a president, who didn't want to be held accountable for anything. And literally anything that he did, he would say, well, what about this person? What about this person doing something bad? Go look over there. Why don't you go look at it? And it was all deflecting. It was all whataboutism. And it was so, so frustrating, because it is like watching a spoiled child. And then you see that kind of like spill over now and more into society. Or maybe I'm just more aware of it now, where people will do the same thing. Even like what is it, this Taste of Sicily. I busted her drug ring. And her response to that is that I'm like a hater and a loser. Like, I've literally seen a specific president tweet that at people, you know. It's usually like, you know, don't worry about me. Who leaked it, though? It's the leakers that are the problem. That's the same energy that they bring to it.
So do you think the political environment that we're in, not to mention the COVID and all these things, kind of, because your growth on social media has been exponential in a very rapid period of time. Do you think that there's been this underlying kind of perfect storm which created this desire for people to see this righteousness? I mean, do you think that's helped your growth?
yeah, this passion that comes from me is a combined passion of all the people that follow me as well. This is an energy we all share. I am not a public figure. Well, I mean, maybe I am now, but I wasn't a public figure before this. This is the response everyone's having. And the reason why people like to see this, I mean, maybe you correct me because you do watch my stuff as well, is that this is how we feel. This is how a lot of us feel, is that we don't like that we're all trying to, say specifically with COVID, we're trying to work together to survive this, to keep people who are at risk alive. There are immunocompromised, there are children that cannot get vaccinated. And they go, well, you know, not that many kids. I'm like, what do you mean not that many? What if you could avoid one? What if you could avoid a single one? If you put on your fucking face mask, you're not going to do it because it makes you uncomfortable. I can't get past that idea.
I think there's a little bit of this weird dogma cult-like mentality in social media is definitely propagating it to a massive degree where people are throwing out their ideals and other people are buying in because they need something to buy into for their own personal identification. And whether you're following the presidency or you're following, you know, just opinions about the vaccine and stuff like that, people have this weird dogmatic way of buying into this culture. And then they just eschew the same thoughts with seemingly no logic. I mean, you can see it even in the fitness culture when people are trying to get in shape. Oh, it's, oh, I have to be a low carbohydrate person, or, oh, I have to be a, you know, I can't eat, you know, meat because that'll kill me. And it's like, there's no openness and willingness to hear other people's opinions. Do you ever get afraid of cancel culture? I mean, right now, the reason why I think I watch you, I mean, number one, your comedic background really brings in a lot. I mean, it's hard to make humor in this, and I didn't know that going into it, but it makes a whole hell of a lot of sense that you have this comedic background, because you're taking some fucked up situations and you're able to make it entertaining and still somewhat enjoyable while being, you know, corrective, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yes. One thing that I learned is every single person, when I was doing comedy, I was really passionate about the work that I was doing. And I grew up watching stand-up all the time. I was watching Comedy Central, watched every single stand-up that I could. Every time someone grabbed a mic, I don't care who they were, I don't care what the subject was, I was sitting there, I was listening. And there's one thing that I've realized from that when I speak to other people, when I was doing stand-up, is that almost everyone can say that there's a stand-up comedian that has changed their mind on something, you know, or influenced the way they feel about something. And that was something that I thought was kind of a phenomenon. Like, people will say, because of George Carlin, I'm no longer religious. Or because of, say, something Chris Rock said about, you know, crime, I no longer feel this way about this. But comedians have a huge, huge impact on people's minds. And the reason is, have you seen the movie American History X?
Of course, yes, yeah.
So yeah, it's about this, you know, not this Nazi that goes to jail, right? And he's a white supremacist. Sorry, I shouldn't say white. It's actually white supremacist. He's a white supremacist, goes to prison. Edward Norton does a beautiful job. His acting is amazing. Goes to prison, right? And then he's folding laundry with a black inmate. And this black inmate is talking to him every single day. And Edward Norton, his character, never responds, wouldn't look at him, wouldn't give him even the dignity of a human being to even like respond or even glance at him. And one day, the other inmate, the black one, makes a joke. And once he makes this joke, Edward Norton, you can see he tries to hold it back, but he just starts laughing. And once he starts laughing, he completely opens up to him. And once he opens, do you remember this?
I do. Yeah, vividly. Yeah.
He changes. Like all of it starts to change. And that's because humor brings down our walls. We put up walls. I mean, especially here in this country, we are so tribal and we are so protective of like, which side are you on before I even talk to you? Because that's going to determine everything that I believe, everything I believe about you. And so to bring in humor, it brings those walls down. You make someone laugh, you'll get through to them.
You know what's a sad thing, though, that I've been hearing lately from a lot of like really well-known comedians is so many of them are afraid to be comedians now because the cancel culture that's out there, they're afraid to make jokes about people, things that people take too seriously and identify with too much, because it's no longer an open willingness to have some of those jokes sometimes. And I worry what American comedy will be. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And look, and people, so I have a perspective on comedy that I think most of my own audience would disagree with, but that's just from my experience, is that I don't think comedy should be what we're looking at to restrict so much as to like, unless like the comedian is causing like harm, I don't think that should be our focus.
I would agree. Look, there's tons of people out there who, but the comedians are out there to make light of situations that we take too seriously in general, right? Like that's kind of the nature of it.
Yeah, but they're also, you know, they're also pushing their perspective. They're trying to get that out there, which, you know, all of us do in different respects. But I don't, my opinion is that the comedy isn't the most dangerous. Let me give you an example. Joe Rogan right now. There's a debate on whether or not he should have a platform. And people are saying to me, like, you got to do something about it. I'm like, do what about it? That's not my concern. I don't care that he has a platform. That you take that away from him, you're going to make him way more popular than he was. You take away his platform, he's going to be like a, you know, canceled, all that. He'll go deep into that culture. I think what we need to do is promote more listening to experts. And I think we need more people out there promoting the other things, counteracting that. Like, I don't think that putting, you know, silencing him will do anything. And now if he said something that caused somebody to die, like if he specifically said, do this, and someone said, Joe Rogan told me to do this and I did, and they die. Yeah. Joe Rogan's responsible for that.
So let's unpack this a little bit, because this is an interesting kind of come around. So the last, let's call it a bust that you did, where you put, you know, this clinic and this doctor and the DA and everybody in this thing, you know, the Taste of Sicily, I think it was, out there, and they're running this ivermectin, really alternative COVID, medically with no foundation that really to what they were doing in this pharmacy and everybody else out there. These were a lot of the same things that Joe Rogan seemed to endorse. Now, he said he had Dr. Sanjay Gupta and all the other people on there, but that he seemed to endorse. So are these people acting in part because of the rhetoric that he's so open to? I mean, how does that all come about? I mean, it's still, what they did is illegal, clearly, right?
Yeah, I can't control people's opinions. And, you know, if Joe Rogan has an opinion about, has a dumb opinion, that's what I would expect for the host of Fear Factor to do. I mean, I don't know why I'm putting him on a like pedestal to be like now he has a very popular podcast, and yeah, he could put harmful information out there. And when he does that, he should be held accountable by his own advertisers, by his own platforms and stuff. That is not what I do. I don't cover people and their opinions until it becomes like a direct violence. I'm not a fan of Joe Rogan. I don't listen to him. I tried listening to him once years ago. It wasn't for me.
You know, I used to be a long time ago, but I will say the candor and context of the show has changed to the point where I'll only listen to a guest that I actually like and want to hear, but it's not because Joe Rogan's interviewing him, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You just wanted to hear that person. Well, I'm not worried about, say, cancel culture. I'm not worried about that, especially with comedians, being that I've done comedy myself. I'm not worried about that because I think that if any comedian loses a job or gig or opportunity, it is because, you know, they said something, they did something that, or they encouraged something that, you know, maybe got someone hurt or was bad, but there's nothing to identify there. Everyone knows who they are. Everyone, you know, they're very public about what they're saying. They're not hiding it. There's no place for me to act here. You know what I mean? I don't need to identify anybody. I don't need to associate with it. It's already done. It doesn't make sense for me to go after the comedians. Now, in general, do I believe that they should be, say, canceled? As you say, hey, if they've said something that that has been harmful, say like Louis C.K. Louis C.K. was doing great comedy for a long time. And it comes out that, hey, a lot of the things that he's standing up for, it looks like in his real life, he does quite the opposite, and that he's, multiple allegations come out of him sexually harassing people and stuff. And so people don't really want to listen to him talk about that kind of thing anymore. I mean, that's going to happen. That's a consequence of his actions. Do I think that it's wrong? No, I think that the public response is the public response. Now, if people wanted to go to his house and like burn it down, yeah, obviously that's too much.
Right. But in some ways, the public response for a public figure is much different. What you're really doing, and I think there's a corollary here that society really should appreciate. What you're really doing is bringing a public response to people who otherwise wouldn't have the same scrutiny that someone like, you know, Joe Rogan would. So we're really holding people to the same standard is really what you're doing here. And that's why I look at what you're doing and I say, this is no different than the same stuff they're probably gossiping about. They're probably talking about Joe Rogan. They're probably talking about Louis C.K. But now when you put their life under the same level of microscope and scrutiny, there's just so many clear things that they're doing that are way, way worse. And in some ways, I give celebrities the credit. So let me ask you a question. Bear with me, and you don't feel obligated to answer this, but you've got a platform now. You got, you know, essentially over a million followers in aggregate for sure. You know, you are now a public figure, and you are spending your personal time and energy doing this. Where does this go for you? Like, how does your brand grow? I mean, is there a way for you to scale this and build something with it that you want? Or is this going to be your pro bono endeavor? I mean, what happens next?
If you notice, I don't have sponsorships or brand deals. I don't do that. There's one website I promote that offers children's face masks because it's a good cause. And because in my name, they donated 3,000 masks to children to No Child Hungry. Oh, actually, they tried donating that to No Child Hungry, and they said they don't take masks. So he just gave them the money. He gave them, like, I think a couple thousand bucks. So he did that in my name. So I'm happy to put their link to their company on my in my link tree. And if people click that, I do get a portion of that. But I really only wanted to work with them because of that. Other than that, like, I don't do brand deals and I don't do sponsorships because I know that if I'm doing what I'm doing and there are people who don't want to be held accountable, they're just going to go after them. And I'm not afraid of the consequences of being ethical, but I can't put that on somebody else. And I also don't want my content to be curated towards somebody who might, you know, support it. Because it's not ultimately about myself. I try to take myself out of it as much as I can. I try to focus it on what is actually happening. So my growth, that is something that, like, a lot of people have been talking to me about. You know, I do get, I can't say specifically, but I do have certain networks, certain, you know, producers, agents, stuff. They approach me every now and then. But ultimately, what I want to do is what I'm doing, because I believe that it is the right thing to do. And that I'm trying to make the world a better place for my kids. As a father, like, I feel this responsibility as to, like, if this is the world they're going to live in, I want to do everything I can to make sure this world is a better place. And if that means that I'm just not going to get paid by TikTok and I don't gain a single follower and it continues like this, that's what it is. But as far as growing my brand and bringing it to other platforms and stuff, I don't know. Like, I'll be honest. It's not something that I thought of going into this. That's not what I started this out to do. So I'm just kind of trying to figure it out. I'm on my own. Like, I don't have an agent or a manager or an assistant, and I truly love what I'm doing. I'm passionate about it. So I don't know. I truly do not know. There are a lot of offers out there and there's a lot of things to think about, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know that my input has really any value, but what I will say to you is that resonates a lot with me. I'm sure it resonates with a lot of people who listen to this, because largely the reason why I do this, the podcast and all the social media stuff that I do, is not because I make any money on it, but because I have a son and, you know, his legacy, his future means a lot to me. And this is daddy's contribution that'll survive daddy, you know, and I can completely respect that. One of the things a really high net worth individual, he's a celebrity, you know, he's got his shit figured out, told me a while back is like, look, you can reach one person at a time, you know, doing stuff at your law firm, but you can reach thousands of people, if not millions of people, if you're successful in the social media and the things that you do. But he said, never feel guilty about monetizing what it is that you do. He's like, I'm not saying you have to work with advertisers or, you know, people you don't like. He said, but grow a YouTube channel, you know, go, you know, join, in your case, the Creators Fund. Do those things, because every little nickel, dime, whatever, you're giving back to your family from the time you're taking away to do the things that you're doing, which you hope will ultimately help them and society. So food for thought. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm a subject matter expert here, but there's got to be a way for you to monetize this, because at some point in time, it's going to take too much of your time. I can look at the stuff you're doing now and I can tell how much energy goes into this, and you respond to comments, and the fact that you're willing to engage with someone like me, it says a lot about your character, man. And it's impressive.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I do always accept tips for what I do. I do agree with you. I do agree with you that my time is worth the money too. I just, again, it's just, it's not really my realm of knowledge and how to do that. So I just don't know. I would love for this to be my job so that I'm just doing this and I'm able to provide for my family doing this. I don't disagree with you, and I don't think there's anything unethical about it. I just so happen that I just don't. So
no, I don't think so. I don't think so either. And I've seen enough of your content to have a pretty fair gauge on that. And frankly, I think it's impressive. And I don't think that a lot of people have the stomach for it, because a lot of people just look the other way, move on, and just ignore the person.
Yeah. And to finish off what I said earlier about the person who had laughed at that racist joke, it's so inconsequential, like in comparison to the other things that I'm doing. So I ended up taking down the videos of her, and I sent her a message and I just said, hey, you know what? It's clear that you are apologetic about it. I don't believe what you did was that problematic, especially given your response. So I just wanted to say that personally, I do forgive you, and I'm not worried about this, and I hope we could be friends. And we're still friends today. And my videos are down. I think she made it through the best, but again, is because what she did wasn't that big of a deal in comparison to the other things that I cover.
Well, I want to be mindful of your time. I appreciate you. I appreciate you contributing, you know, the time that you have to the show and coming on. I know you got a lot going on. I've seen the frequency with which you've been updating posts, and obviously the national media stuff. So to fit this in, it really means a lot to me. Before we let you go, though, can you tell everybody where to find you? I know all your user information. That will be in all the show notes if somebody's listening on any of the streaming platforms. But please tell them where to find you, Dinesh.
Absolutely. You can find me. I mainly operate out of TikTok. My handle is ThatDonishGuy, which I'm sure you'll have the spelling for. I'm also on YouTube. I am trying to build that as well to do a different type of thing that I do on the other platforms, but I'm there too. I would love support on YouTube to get more audience there so I could do stuff there. I'm also on Twitter. Twitter is where I end up putting things that end up on the news. Anything I post to Twitter ends up in a news article for some reason. And then Instagram as well. All of them, same username, ThatDonishGuy. I post different type of content on OnlyFans, but again, ThatDonishGuy, you can find me anywhere.
All right, brother. Well, I sincerely appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you are listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. You're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.